Hey guys, it's Jessica, founder of Noonday Collection. Welcome to the You Matter podcast. On this podcast, I want you to get ready to be inspired to be more courageous and to own your worth. Get ready to feel connected to the artisan community and to the community where you have a place of belonging, the ambassador community. Because the truth is, you matter, and I'm so glad you're here. Welcome to the conversation. Your community manager, and Jessica Honegger sitting next to me, too.
Hey, guys.
And we are sitting down today with Tamara Akilu. She is our manager of production and sourcing here at Home Office, and Karen Gibbs, our leader of artisan partnerships. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having us again.
We're excited.
Very happy to be here.
And we're going to be talking about Vietnam today. So I think this is the first time we really focused on Vietnam on the podcast. And I know, Jessica, just jump into this really, really funny story that you and Karen have.
Yeah. So I wanted to get to share sort of our history of how we started working with the group that we now work with in Vietnam. And it was actually a connection that Karen made for me. So Karen, I would love for you to share that story.
Sure. So this is, at the first time you never succeed, or if you do not succeed the first time, try again. So Jessica was looking for a horn production, and I introduced her to one group, and it went south. And so I'm sitting at the New York gift show, and I see Jessica coming down the aisle with this ferocious look on her face. She comes right up to me and says, "Okay, Karen, that horn group didn't work out." I was like, "Oh, gosh. Okay, let's try one more time." But I said, "Jessica, you've got to suspend any kind of aesthetic, evaluation of this group."
So when you say didn't work out, you mean like it was not...
The production was...
It was terrible. Not,
yeah, late delivery, poor quality, cracking, peeling, bad communication. I mean...
All the above.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, a great group. They have a good heart, but just no business sense.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I said, "Jessica, you have to just suspend your design aesthetic for a minute. I'm going to introduce you to this amazing guy from Vietnam who has really wonderful quality product, amazing ability to work with artisan groups, one of like on the forefront of fair trade principles in Vietnam, a great guy, but his booth looks terrible." So I was like, "Close your eyes and let me introduce you to David of Olac Designs." Because really his integrity as a business person and the quality of what he does, he's just a really exceptional human being. And I think that was the first introduction. And you went digging through that booth.
I dug through, and I have pictures that my very first pictures I took of some items. And I remember I was like, "Okay, David, could you do this? Could you make this thicker? Can you make this white? Does it vary?" And he was just super like, he's very entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. He's very entrepreneurial. And he was just willing to, "Sure, we can try that. We can do this." But it's so cool because he used to tell me, "No, we can't do metal. I can't figure out the export import thing." And because the designs at first from Vietnam were just so simple because they were just horn. And like we could barely get earring backs, And so that was a conversation that I kind of had from the beginning because I had this vision for what I really wanted horn to be at Noonday. And it just took at least a year and a half of really working with him and having him see this is a legitimate partner before he was going to spend the time to really go to the next level for Noonday.
But now I see the way that they're working is just this huge, like, can-do attitude. Whatever we ask them to do, yes, we can do that. We'll try. And they take it to the artisans, and the artisans have the same attitude that they used to have. "Oh, I don't think we can do this. No, this is impossible. How would you do that? No. They just laugh at the designs, but... David and his wife, Maya, are always like, "Let's just try it. Why don't you just try this one little piece first?" They have the can-do attitude, and they're teaching it now to the artisans.
To the artisans, yeah. Karen, why don't you share a little bit, like, how did David end up at this artisan show?
So David was one of the co-founders of the first big artisan fair trade organization in Vietnam. that was probably founded, I think they just celebrated their 30th anniversary or something. So he's had, you know, just long history of working in the artisan sector in Vietnam. So I've come across him on different projects. I probably first met him, I don't know, 18 years ago, 19 years ago when I worked on a little project.
We have to
in
have
Vietnam.
Him come to shine.
Yeah. He's really remarkable. And what always struck me about him is that, you know, he's got this great balance of like the intention of fair trade and the intention of working in the artisan sector. He's got a good balance of fair trade and also recognizing kind of that cultural value, right? So he wants to preserve some of these craft techniques, and that's really important to him. So I like that. He also has a real sense for the importance of quality. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's why, I mean, I think this is a perfect example of like how Noonday is different in this field and in this space, because Noonday cares so much about the integrity of the businesses that, you know, the producers who are making these products, but also wants to push the boundary and have a better quality product and have, you know, more innovative design. And so I've met David probably on 5 or 6 different projects when he was always working for that same value, right? Mm-hmm. Let's work in a new part of the country where we can get in, create some income, keep these artisan communities sort of alive and thriving, right? So that sense of seeking out really new places to work because craft is really essential to the culture of those communities.
Right.
And then just super entrepreneurial.
Yes.
You know, so he left this big sort of nonprofit organization because he saw that he could do more for the craft sector by being an entrepreneur.
Right.
And so I think that entrepreneurial spirit is what he, like Tamara says, has inspired in the artisans that work with him too. And then, I've seen him, you know, run into him at different trade shows. He's just one of those people I've always admired.
Yeah. So I got to go there about a year ago to visit Vietnam for the first time. And he hosted us so well, so kind. And he took us to we ate the best food ever. The food in Vietnam is so good.
It's awesome.
And we just loved going in particular to the horn village where you walk in and it's like there's
so
a horn person in every house, you know, crafting. Mm-hmm. But he's really been able to develop a relationship with our main horn producer. But I would love to hear, Tamara, because you really went and got to see the whole process of how the metal and the horn comes together. And the marble. I mean, that was a whole new material. And he said, well, yeah, we can go figure that out for you guys. So tell us a little bit more about what you learned. It was your first time to go to Vietnam.
Yes, I was super excited to go to Vietnam for the first time just for the new cultural experience and everything and all the great food. But I had also never seen the metal casting put together with the horn, or I'd never seen how they do marble before either. So the whole technique was really cool for me to be able to see from beginning to end. And the unique thing is that, so there's the metal workshop creates the metal pieces by casting the same way that like Bawa does in Kenya. And then the horn workshop cuts the horn and shapes and does all kinds of really cool things with horn, similar to what they do in Uganda. But the really cool and special thing is like putting them together, and it's not easy at all. It's a super laborious process. So you have to coordinate the groups, the horn groups and the metal group, so that they're making the exact same size pieces. And then when you bring them together, then the horn people have to sit there and like shave off the horn on the edges and fit them into every single little metal piece. And each metal piece, even though they try to be as consistent as possible, is slightly different. So they have to do each one by hand and fitting them in there without any little edges being, you know, missing there. And the other cool thing about the horn workshop is that they have this really cool laser cutting machine. And you would think that's not very artisan at all, but it's so cool because they can make the incredible designs like on the Daybreak or the Calypso.
Or that's the cuff with the triangle, is that?
Yeah, there's a cuff coming out this fall that's has really intricate laser cut designs. And so they can cut them that way, but the whole process of taking the horn and then cutting the piece off with the correct color that they want, then sanding it down, and then smoothing it again and trying to find the right color so that you can have a consistency or range within a certain range, and then taking it to the laser cutter, and then taking it off the laser cutter, and you're still going over each little hole by hand in hand carving. Wow. And then you have to put it in this hot wax. I'm not sure what this liquid is, but it's very hot. And it creates the rounded piece for like a cuff, for example. Oh. The laser
cut. So that you can
cuff.
Shape it.
Yes, you need to shape it. And you need to get that shape perfect so that it feels good on a woman's wrist. Because you all know how it feels if it's just a little bit off. It's not as comfortable.
Right.
So, and then they need to get the opening exactly right.
So it heats the horn and you can shape the horn?
Yes. Right. So that's the crazy. Horn is a wide funnel mm-hmm. shape to start with. And so they're cutting that in half mm-hmm. and then in half the length was first mm-hmm. and creating these like long rectangle pieces. Mm-hmm. That's the first step. Mm-hmm. So that's how they got the rectangle piece to do the laser cut mm-hmm. and then to shape it.
And so what commentary, because this was the first time for you to meet the metal workers. Mm-hmm. And so what was that like? Because I know sometimes when you're going in to meet a new producer and they're like, oh, you're the face behind all of these orders. What were some of your takeaways from meeting the metal group?
I think they're used to actually having visitors. Maybe from OLAC. So they were like excited to be able to tell me and show me the whole process. Okay. And OLAC in general, like Mai was taking me around. She was so proud and excited to be able to explain how they do the metal and horn mm-hmm. because it's so unique, so innovative, and no one else in Vietnam is doing that. So wow. It's really elevating both groups.
Right.
And then they're able to coordinate that, and it's really making something even more special. So that's an example of collaborative design that's really benefiting Vietnamese artisans.
Is this metal group a group that existed before these designs were essentially tasked to David's group? And was it David's group or are they a new group that's
they existed as a group, as a metal artisan group. And then David like found them. So all the groups that he works with are ones that he found, like when he goes into the Horn village or even the Hmong fabric village or whatever. He talks to each and every different group that's, you know, there and finds the ones that are entrepreneurial, that are open-minded, that are willing to try new things, just the same way that we look for artisan businesses to partner with and which ones are willing to work with the fair trade principles. And he really teaches those to them and asks them then again about how they're paying their workers and things like that.
When we see entrepreneurs who really are looking at craft as a way to kind of preserve culture, they go out and seek existing groups because those groups, it'll be like a village that makes horn or a village that makes leather, a village that does lacquer work or a village that does embroidery. So they, rather than like creating their own group and building their own workshop, they really go to the place where that skill is from, right? Yeah. So it's truly indigenous.
And it really is preserving
it. From there.
Yeah.
And it's preserving it. And it's supporting an existing business rather than trying to create another business that would compete with it. So, and I think another thing that Mai and David do is they do a lot of capacity building. We talk a lot about capacity building, and David and Mai, so capacity building is really, you know, providing training to artisans to improve their skills or introduce a slightly new technique or a new tool or ways to improve what they're making. Mm-hmm. And David and Mai do a lot of that, both with the groups that Noonday's working with. And then also David and Mai are even hired by other NGOs to go out and do capacity building for artisan groups, which is really neat. So our work, Noonday's work with OLAC Designs is supporting capacity building. So if you think about it, we're doing this collaborative design and capacity building to help OLAC Designs reach into this totally new part of the market with a more innovative product. And then David and Mai are doing capacity building with so many different artisan groups in Vietnam.
So David and Mai actually do the research on specific techniques or materials that we'll ask them to work with that are new to those artisans and figure out like how are we going to be able to do this and how can we explain it to them. And so like, for example, when we started to work with marble, they had a lot of like different production problems and questions about how they were going to shape this and get this to work with the metal. So Mai went to one of the most amazing master marble artisans. He's this really old man. I have this amazing picture of him. And he does these huge, massive marble sculptures of like Buddha and like these huge things that go into like hotels and like pillars and columns, but really, really ornately and detailed etchings. So he's this amazing sculptor, and he's been doing it for like 50 years. And she's just like, I will just pay you for your time. Give us some advice. And he's like, yeah, I don't have time to make jewelry. That's so silly for me. But I can help you because this is an easy problem for me. And so they're able to get like technical advice from some of the masters of the craft and then take those techniques and say like, okay, we figured out how to do this. And then they teach the actual artisan, like, if you just do it this way, it'll work. And sure enough, they try it and they're like, wow, that's amazing.
Right.
And they learn a new technique.
And the thing that it makes me think of is the bracelet I'm wearing. This skill was taught by a man who's done this for 50 years in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of the greats taught this group how to do this. It's just, that's really mm-hmm. incredible.
And I would say this is how we work in Vietnam, Guatemala, India, wherever we are sourcing items that have a lot of different groups that touch it. We're always working with sort of this entrepreneur that's then working with other entrepreneur mm-hmm. leaders in the community as well. So it's a little different than, say, how we work in Uganda or in Ethiopia or in Ecuador. So just to kind of give context mm-hmm. for, you know, Noonday, we work in different ways mm-hmm. in every country, depending on really the crafts that are in that country, how the country's set up. For instance, in Guatemala, there's, you know, about over 150 indigenous groups in Guatemala. And so it always takes having this coordinator person mm-hmm. who has a vision for their country, mm-hmm. who is willing to drive to all the, mm-hmm. you know, remote places and willing to work with these artisans to help give them the vision for, gosh, if they can elevate their designs, if they can work with Noonday, then we can really grow their market.
Well, and it sounds like, you know, this, as you identify each of those artists and entrepreneurs to work with, they really do have such an impact because they do have to have that vision or that passion for their country and engaging those other groups that they could potentially work with one day and also help capacity build. So it just goes to show that it's more than just the impact of the one group that they might be working with at the time, but to have the vision to really elevate their country mm-hmm. as a whole. That's really neat.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think there's huge trickle-down impact, right? Mm-hmm. The Noonday will never be able to measure specifically, but just when we're able to, you know, work with OLAC and get them to, you know, work with this master marble artisan mm-hmm. and introduce a new technique to those artisans are going to take that and go with it.
Yes.
And we're going to find new products on the local market, you know, mm-hmm. 5 years down the line, which means increased income for them. So it's really like Noonday's making this investment into the craft sector, right? That
yeah,
has this, right. those ramifications for a long time.
It reminds me of how tech innovation works too.
Yeah.
Like when you, mm-hmm. you know, invest in, you know, the young innovators in tech, they carry that and they take it off, you know, and a few years down the road, there's all this new innovation that never would have happened. It's the same thing
and
handmade and the craft sector. And mm-hmm. for me, that's just really interesting because we don't really see that, but now we are, at least in my opinion.
And you know, Tamara's brought up a great point is, so one of the things that's unique, I think, about Vietnam, and you find it in certain other countries, around the world, but for their craft sector, the master craftsman is very, very important mm-hmm. to their whole culture. And at a time, these master craftsmen were supported by the government. So there were master craftsmen, a certain number identified for each technique, and they were supported by the government, and the government bought a certain amount of like either, you know, decorative objects for buildings or, you know, gifts for like governmental gifts, et cetera. But that really kept that technique, those skills alive for mm-hmm. for many generations. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why we see in certain countries like Vietnam, this incredibly rich craft culture where mm-hmm. that idea of a master craftsman is alive and well, which is just really neat.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
like turning craft into art.
Well, right? when I remember last summer, we went and visited a ceramic village
mm-hmm.
because we have sampled ceramics. It's not made it into the line yet.
Oh,
Joanna
we have
keeps
one little
fishing
thing.
Me. Okay, yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. We do have something we're working on.
We're
for
working
spring.
On it. That's why I went to the ceramic village
yes.
and I saw how they made that one little thing.
Well, and that's what's so hard because you know, all of us on the product, you know, I'm on everyone's team, but in the product team, we go and you go to the ceramic village and you're like, I want to work here. But then it's about how do you find, create a design that's actually going to sell? Because ultimately the impact comes through our ambassadors creating a marketplace for the artisans and customers buying that product. So that's what can be so challenging about going and visiting these countries and seeing the need and seeing the potential. But then at the same time wondering, gosh, how can we apply ceramics to jewelry in a way that it's going to sell to the Noonday customer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even Monk Fabric, we have a little.
That's right.
Little thing coming up. And that's just something that we tried to work in to be able to work with that crew.
Yeah.
For one season.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. And then it's exciting, too, to be able to follow trends.
Yeah.
And then you think.
To follow the trends.
Because if a material suddenly becomes really popular, like that's what happened in Kenya, for instance, you know, where they saw that brass was a really growing trend. So some of them had to shift and, okay, we can't sell baskets anymore. Now we're going to figure out brass. So it's even cool with African styles, some of the designs that they just sent us for spring 17.
Yes.
And we've been talking to them about how we could innovate and, you know, not just rely solely on paper beads. And we're really seeing them take that and run with it. And it's really, really exciting. It's just so exciting. I think for us, we actually just came from a sample review meeting for spring 2017.
Like 10 minutes ago.
10 minutes ago. Right,
so we have that on the mind.
That's on the mind right now.
I can tell you're trying not to like slip anything out.
Right. For spring 17, y'all haven't even seen fall yet, which is awesome, by the way. But it's just, it's so satisfying. I get a lot of satisfaction now because it's been 5 years and it used to be these sample review meetings were just a nightmare. Things would come in and we're like, I don't understand. And quality was such a huge issue. And then we'd scramble. We'd have to scramble to like, oh my gosh, we're going to be able to design something that's actually going to be able to sell. And now, I mean, we could have a line today. I mean, it's there. I mean, it's hard to choose now. We have to actually edit out what the artisans are sending us. And it's just amazing, you know, as we work with people with long-term partnership, building capacity with this collaborative design and coming alongside of them. Like, we really are partners, business partners. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, when is this going to come out? Because I know
this episode?
Yeah.
I think it'll be, like, beginning of June. Okay. It's May when we're recording, by the way, guys.
Yeah, and I just think that that's also what ambassadors will see as they travel to Peru and Guatemala and Africa this summer. It's just that sense of partnership that is really exciting, that only time can bring, you know? So it's really neat.
Yeah, we've really seen the artisan business partners maturing in their business sense. And you might even see that on the artisan trips, that they're not as scrappy as they used to be. They really got sophisticated design sense, and their business sense is increasing. And it's really fun to be able to see the change in their businesses and the capacity that they have then to be able to serve us and other buyers. Mm-hmm. It's so great for them.
Yeah, and then now they get to serve as our customers even better so that their businesses can actually grow and improve.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's cool to hear how they're probably even more connected from group to group in ways that they probably weren't before because they do have to collaborate. And so it's neat that Noonday has sort of ignited that, and I'm sure that they've run with it even beyond just what they make for us, is they're able to probably collaborate to remain competitive in the whole marketplace, not just with our orders.
Mm-hmm. Karen, do you have anything else you want to add?
No, gosh. I just, no.
Have you been to Vietnam yet?
Yeah, I have, but a long time ago. Long, long, long time ago.
So that is where I'm like, okay, how can we get an ambassador trip to Vietnam?
Yeah. Oh, that would be so cool. Oh, Vietnam. Oh, you would love it.
It's so wonderful.
I think that's on the horizon. And I think we have to think about some Vietnam representation at Shine, too.
Absolutely.
It's such an interesting story, you know, and the more stories that we build in and the ambassadors different countries ambassadors can visit and different artisan groups that you can meet at Shine or just start to know, you see how unbelievably diverse the artisan sector is.
Yeah.
And it's in that diversity that we find strength in the mm-hmm. sector and to do something really creative and unique. And it's why Noonday's pieces can look so diverse, mm-hmm. right? Is because, and these, you know, different countries and different regions within countries, the impact is different and the profile of the groups yeah. and the businesses yes. is different. And it's not a cookie cutter, you yep. know, sector by any means. And so I think Tamara got to see that a little bit, right? After yes. her experience working in so many parts of the world and just to see how Vietnam is different and where its strengths mm-hmm. are. And, you know, we have a dream that wouldn't it be so great if we could send David to another part of the world to have him do some training in horn production yes. with other artisan groups yeah. that we're working with. Or how can we start some of these, or metal, or yeah. how can we do start thinking of this capacity building on kind of like an east-west basis, you uh-huh. know, between our artisan groups and not just between Noonday and the artisan mm-hmm. businesses. And I think you can really start to see that when you travel to different groups and see where their strengths are, because mm-hmm. everybody has their strengths. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you were talking about the diversity just within the country, that makes me think about how it's educating us as customers too. And as a consumer of Vietnam isn't just this one blob of a country, you know, or this other country isn't just this one blob of a country, like doing the same thing, just the same way that the U.S. isn't all the same and what we produce too. So if anything, it's educating about a culture and about a deep, rich history that, you know, I've never been to Vietnam. I have no idea when I'll get to go to Vietnam ever on my own, but I'm able to see and learn about the rich history just mm-hmm. through the jewelry that we yep. sell and the intricate diversity. It's cool.
I definitely saw that craft history is still really alive and well, because even when you walk in the airport, they have these like displays all along the walls of the marble industry. And so you see the marble craftsman sitting there with his marble and the horn and all of the different really traditional crafts that are just like indigenous to Vietnam, and how important it is that they show that. That's the first thing you see when you come in there, where this is what Vietnam stands for. Then you drive in the taxi, and all along the roads, especially the main roads, there's these amazing ceramic murals. Did you yes. see that, Jessica?
Yes.
Gorgeous. And they go on for miles and yes. miles, and each wow. like block is another artist, and they're sponsored by like private businesses. Like some of the businesses that did really well, they sponsor a section of art. And like, what country like celebrates art that much? I don't mm-hmm. see that in the States. It was so amazing to see how much they really valued beauty and art and tradition, and how that was so much a part of their culture.
They invest deeply
yes.
into it, and they have for a long time. Mm-hmm. So you see that. It's why there's just that rich culture mm-hmm. to... There's this whole notion of culture as a driver of economic development, mm-hmm. And you really see it. It's very much alive in Vietnam, as it is in Guatemala, too, and right. Peru, and just really recognizing those unique assets that you have as a country, and how can you really transform yeah. it into economic opportunities for people.
It's probably what makes them such a great partner, too. Is because it's such a motivation for their business.
Yeah.
I want to see that for other countries. Like when I see that, I'm like, can we do that in Ethiopia? Can we do that in this country? Can I make it like the coolest place on earth to find like whatever artillery jewelry or to see these craft traditions? Like I want to see that for every country, that mm-hmm. they're really using their what's really special and unique to their country as an economic driver. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, this was fun, guys. I know that Vietnam is on your radar because we want to go there. And I know some of my favorite pieces this season have been from Vietnam. And I'll tell you, there's more coming. It just yeah. keeps getting more beautiful and exciting. So thanks for tuning in to this episode of You Matter. And if you have any questions or you want to continue the conversation about Vietnam, just go to Facebook and hashtag You Matter, and we'll be sure that Tamara and Karen can get back to you.